author this morning, and we were talking about England, and she's been 5 times since she was just up in Yorkshire to, you know, to be at Haworth and the Bronte sister, you know, the Bronte family.
Yes, yes.
And it's beautiful up there. So let's start, because I want to know more about you, and the audience wants to know more about you.
Okay.
And what you do, and the books that you've written. And I was hoping that you have some close at hand that you could actually show us.
I do, yes, because I'm at my desk, so.
I'm not at my desk. It's usually messy.
You can't see the mess. It's below the camera. We're good.
We're good. I know. I can set my little corner up. So, yeah, what's your latest book?
So my latest book is also my first book, because I've come back and done a second edition of a book that I wrote on marketing. So my first book was about marketing, you know, so it was a very business book. And I wrote it about 2 years ago, and I thought I'd update it because not only has the content changed, which, you know, the world of marketing changes a lot, but also my writing voice has changed, and my attitude, and I think I approach it a little bit differently than I did 2 years ago. So I wanted a book out there that really represented what I feel and think today, and how I would present those ideas today. So,
excellent. And can you? I'm going to put my glasses back on because I actually want to see you better.
Yeah, there you go.
I can see, but I can always see better with my glasses. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know why I wasn't wearing them, because of the light reflecting. But if I keep my head down a little bit, just like not go up. So, can you talk about that? How your writing has changed, and why you feel that? Have you thought about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd spent my whole career, and I think a lot of people probably have done something similar. I spent my whole career writing in the voice of a brand, or in the voice of corporate executives, or in other people's voices, right? I worked as a writer for technology companies, and worked with over 100 different companies, and got really chameleon-like with my voice, right? I mean, I could write to sound like this or that, or, you know, edgy or stodgy, whatever the corporate brand might be. So the challenge with my first book was suddenly I was writing it in my own voice. And it took me, I actually had to kind of restart the draft several times to figure out what that meant. Mm-hmm. And even so, I think that now, 2 years later, I am more comfortable just presenting my opinions more strongly than I was 2 years ago. So I've come back, and this is this book here. I'll show you. There you go. You see it. So this is the one that's just being published now, and it's a second edition. So that's a very, I blocked my light when I did that. That's a very interesting process to revisit something that you've written. I thought it would be a small revision, but of course, once you open the door, you know, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't like that so much anymore. I could fix this. This could be sharper. This could be better. And so, you know, yeah.
But always, it always seems, I'm just closing, making sure that windows are closed here and that they don't beep on us. But I do feel, for me as a writer, it's going, when I do go back, it's great. And it's also does open that Pandora's box of, wow, do I have to rewrite this? Do I have to rewrite the whole thing? And especially, you know, if the work's much older, because, you know, it's like you change as a person, and your writing can change.
Absolutely.
As you evolve. So, you know, and I think it's like that always room for improvement. And I also heard recently, I have a business coach, and she mentioned in a coaching call how procrastination, and I do feel that writers often have procrastination. Like, oh, well, you know, I'll write tomorrow. Oh, and then tomorrow comes, like, oh, no, I'll start my book on Monday. But that she said procrastination is perfection. You're dealing with perfectionism.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a careful balance. I mean, you've got it. Writing isn't that the function of writing is for me to communicate with you or with a reader, right? So if it never gets out in the world, it has not filled its function, and maybe I'm not a writer, right? I mean, to be productive, to be effective as a writer, it has to get out in the world. And sometimes, you know, in the old Silicon Valley thing, you have to ship it. You know, you simply have to ship it to say it's, I've reached a point of diminishing returns and I need to get this out. It will meet its somebody's need. It will resonate with someone as it is. Yeah. Perfection is a tough master.
Okay. It is. And, you know, I don't feel that all procrastination is perfectionism for me personally, but I see that in terms of my writing, where I haven't been submitting as a writer. People say to me, you should submit. And I always feel like my piece isn't quite ready to submit. So that's been an interesting process for me of how do I get over that? That is perfectionism for me. Like, how do I get over that? And I'm wondering if you have any feedback and advice on that for me and for the viewers of, you know, when you're stuck on your writing, I was listening to an audio where you were talking about writing, you know, and like we can make up all the excuses of why we don't have time to write. But I'd love it if you would share more about that with our viewers.
Sure. And, you know, so there's a couple topics going here. There's procrastination. There's fear of putting things out. Procrastination can be a symptom of something else, right? Of, in this case, I'm a little afraid to put that out. But also I think procrastination, there's a type of procrastination that is incubation that is very, very productive for a writer. So you have to figure out how to do the procrastination in a way that's going to serve your needs. So I have this theory that as writers, we all, you and me, everyone, and probably every artist of any type, we have a few different sets of mental tools, right? And one of them is these sorts of mental processes that are the creative processes, the things that make associations between ideas or look for patterns, find patterns. And these sometimes pop into our heads without our intentional control, or at least for a lot of us. You know, we wake up at 5 a.m. and it's like, ah, that's the thing I need to write about. Or we're in the shower, you know, or something, taking a walk, and these ideas, a full line of poetry just pops into your head or something like that. And, you know, you've experienced this, right? I mean, you're a creative individual. Yeah. So you've got those sets of mental processes. And I label them as your muse. You know, it's like the Greeks used to have these minor gods, which were the muses of inspiration. But I think cognitive science would say that it's all in here, and they're mental processes that are doing that. And then there's the focused work of sitting down, working, making the grammar work, revising, submitting, checking requirements, all of that hard work of writing. And I label that one the scribe, thinking of those monks that used to sit and copy things before the printing press, you know, they just had to work so hard, but they kept things alive. They got work out into the world. And successful writing happens when both of those pieces are working together.
Right.
And that, how that balances out for each of us is a little bit different. Some people, have tons and tons of ideas. But just never finish them up, never wrap them, never complete them. They never put them out in the world to do the work to evaluate and test and refine and put it out there. Other people are, you know, really expert craftsmen of prose, but they're like, hey, I got nothing to write about, you know, and so they just don't write. And I think in either case, they're giving too much of the writing process to one or the other of those two internal sets of processes. Either they're letting the muse be in charge and then the scribe's not invited to the party, or vice versa. So when you talk about not being willing to put things out in the world, you know, the muse can be fearful of criticism. You know, it's a little frightening. And the scribe's job is in a way to say, it's okay, I'll take this, I'll get it, I'm going to revise it, I'm going to do due diligence, maybe run it by someone, and I'm going to let it go out in the world. You know, you have to trust that handoff.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And acknowledge the fact that it's, you know, it's frightening. It's frightening to put your things out. Everybody feels that.
Yes. And, you know, it's, I think, so much of what you said made me really think about that, of like, wow, there's so many processes going on, and I like the idea of the muse.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, I have this book, The Nine Muses, and sort of having, almost like having this mythic, you know, a mythic character or a mythic world, even if you're doing, something like very technical writing.
Yeah.
How we can have a muse that's our muse that will help us along the way. And I'm very much with one of my coaching students recently. What I suggest is to get up, you know, when people say, oh, I don't have time to write. And I'll say, well, just, you know, get up 15 minutes earlier each day. Even if you get up 15 minutes earlier, you'll have 15 minutes to write in the day that you say you don't have any time. And then recently when I gave her a prompt for the following week, which was a prompt that I said, just work on this one prompt every single day. And I said, and I would suggest that you actually make it into a ritual, that you light a candle. And I think, was it Maya Angelou that talked about, is it Maya Angelou or the other amazing writer that I'm blanking on her name?
There are so many.
Sort of would decide, oh, I'm going to write my next book and then check into a hotel.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Who is that? Yes. Okay. Yeah. I think it's another one.
Yes. Awesome.
It'll occur to me later on today, of course.
Yes. Completely blanking.
Yeah.
Going into the hotel, you know, and sort of saying, I'm going to stay here for several days, for, you know, a couple of weeks. I'm going to start my book. And to light a candle, you know, each time that I sit down and write. And I think that for me sort of, it is like this little ritual, almost like a Shabbat on Friday night, you know, of sort of, I'm going into this other world. I'm going into this other world now, into my creative world, into my mythical world, but just like, I have to acknowledge that there's the real world that's around me. And then and I think, especially for a writer, I realize that it can be quite isolating because you're at home, or some people go out to cafes and write. I'm not that kind of writer that I can be outside writing. Not creatively anyway. So how to sort of sit at home and be in my writing brain and creative brain while I'm thinking, oh, I still have to put another load of laundry in.
Yeah. Right. Well, this is where I find, you know, having these, thinking of myself as having an inner muse as well as an inner scribe is really useful. You know, so I'm kind of an armchair cognitive science geek. I love reading the books and thinking, you know, oh, this is interesting how this applies to me, or how does this apply in the world? So the muse, you know, having a ritual is a way of giving yourself permission to use these mental processes. It's a good way of triggering yourself. But for me, personifying the muse actually helps me welcome her into the process, invite her, say, you know, I've got a problem I'm going to work on. I'm going to go take work. If you want to chip in with an idea for this title, you know, feel free, right? And also to not be annoyed when I wake up at 5 a.m. and my brain starts going on something. It's like, oh, it's my muse. You know, she likes to get up early and I want her around. So I'm going to just be gracious, acknowledge her contributions, write them down, and then go back to bed. But if I think of her as sort of this, you know, shy, touchy person that kind of is a little, you know, sensitive to criticism, and it actually helps me deal with that part of myself if I kind of personify it, which is interesting.
That's interesting. And so, so what is your, I'm interested in, what is your writing routine? Do you have a routine that you can share?
I do, mostly. So I believe firmly in daily practice, right? That you've got to do it. You've got to write every day, even if you just don't feel like it, even if it's, I think especially if you don't feel like it. I think those are like gold star writing days, because even if you don't end up with anything that you like, you've trained yourself a little bit of resilience, and it's just going to get easier. And, you know, that's how you build the resilience that you need. So I try to, a minimum of, you know, like 750 words every day on something. Even if it's free writing, I do a lot of free writing.
Right.
I just open up, think of a topic, start writing. And a lot of it gets discarded, but a lot of it ends up being the genesis of other things and morphing into other things. That's how I wrote. So I wrote another book. This is the one that most of this is coming from, which is about, writing.
Right.
And I did this by the time I sat down to write it and outline it, I had, I don't know, 20,000 words of stuff, of free writing.
Right.
It didn't go in the book, but it gave birth to the book. I mean, it started the book, so it was kind of interesting. I just wrote enough about it until it sort of became clear what I had to say and how I might want to structure it and what I was excited about sharing and what I was learning by writing that. Mm-hmm. So I do commit to showing up every day. And the hardest thing for me, after years of working for many different clients, was to treat myself, my writing, like a client, like the most important client, and not put it last, but put it first. And I think that's, you know, pretty critical.
I love that, sort of treat your writing like a client, sort of, yeah, a walking client.
Yes, right.
That you have to show up to and have a deadline, because otherwise you'll lose the project. Or,
right.
Yeah. And yeah. I think so much about that is also showing up for ourselves, and showing up for ourselves as artists and as writers. And I've started a practice now because, you know, I'm a writer. My children are grown, so I don't have them at home. But they're always, fortunately, I'm lucky, they're popping in and out, which is great. You know, I love to see them. And I also have a granddaughter, so I look after her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have her all day Wednesday, which I love. You know, it's like the highlight of my week. And I also have to schedule my week that I'm working on my business. And I'm a writer, so how do I run a full-time business and write?
Yeah.
So my business coach again mentioned a book called The Perfect Day Formula. And I read the book, and he's the one, Craig Ballantyne, that suggests getting up 15 minutes earlier each day. But he gets up at 4, and he said, you don't have to get up at 4, you can just make it 15 minutes earlier. So I did the 15 minutes earlier, and I just thought, so what would happen if I got up at 4? And I did it. And I did it for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then I got a cold and got that chest infection, that awful thing that was going around. And it just knocked my socks off. And I was, you know, lying in bed in the morning because I hadn't slept too well, coughing at night. And I just felt completely thrown off track, not getting up at 4.
Interesting.
So now I set my alarm for 3:45 so that I can get up, you know, make a cup of tea, and then be on my computer at 4. And honestly, I feel that I've done some of the best writing of my life.
That's great.
At 4:00 in the morning. And I notice how when the sun comes out and the world starts to come alive, that's when my creative flow starts to dissipate.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So, and I've always been a night person. I've been the night owl, you know, and I was in the music industry. So I was sort of up all night and sleeping all day. And it's just amazing that I can be you know, I wrote for an hour this morning and I wrote 2,100 words.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And then I thought, wow, 2,100 words times 365.
Yeah.
That's a lot of words.
We're talking a lot of words here.
And then I thought, wow, that's like four books in a year. You know when people say they write four books in a year?
Yeah.
Someone I just interviewed, Beth Barani, she had written three books, I think, in 4 months.
Wow. Wow.
How is that possible?
Yeah.
But I think if you're there in a flow, like if I had gone on writing, maybe I would have got another 2,000 words and that would have been 4,000 words in 2 hours. So I think it's a lot about being in the flow, but also what you said about writing every day, you know, it's a practice.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who's a musician and he doesn't say practice makes perfect. He says practice makes practice.
Yeah, that's great. That's very good. Yeah.
I love it. So how many hours do you, you know, on average write a day?
You know, it varies so much. So I'm just coming out of a book launch phase. And when you're in that, I'm independently published. So if you look around, here's a small publishing house right here. Right.
That's so great.
So there's some amount of time when I'm going through that where I'm, you know, doing a lot of, just logistical, figuring stuff out, learning things. So it varies time to time. I mean, I'll go, or when I'm in the middle of drafting, so I'll spend a lot of time on the early stages of a book doing research, doing writing, doing organizing. And then at some point I say, okay, this is my outline. I'm going to start drafting and I will work intensely on that and not many other things as much as possible for a period of time. So it varies. But every day is as part of my practice, you know, I will do a little bit of writing a journal to myself. What is the most important thing I need to get done today? Not the most urgent, but the most important. And that's almost always my writing.
Right.
And then I'll try to list a couple other things, but not more than will fit on a really small piece of paper. You know, if it goes into the next day, if it won't fit on that piece of paper, I got it. Because it's too easy for us to become overwhelmed by the million urgent demands of the world around us and then not write. And that it takes away, you know, the thing about the daily practice and the thing that your student, you were saying, get up 15 minutes early, is she doesn't just get that 15 minutes in the morning when she gets up. She also gets the rest of the day when the subconscious parts of her brain are working on that writing while she's doing other things. Mm-hmm. I think the daily practice actually is kind of a magic trick because it gives you other time when you're not paying attention that your muse, you know, those subconscious processes are looking for patterns, looking for connections, chipping in ideas, or otherwise they're just stockpiling stuff. So the next day you sit down to write, all of a sudden there's this burst of stuff that you didn't have the day before. So it's kind of a magic trick. You gain time that you're not even aware of writing if you've been struggling with the work and then go off and do other things in your day, but let it simmer, incubate in your head.
Yes. And that was, that's such an important piece that you shared that, you know, the 15 minutes a day basically can transfer into the whole day.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
It is simmering there. And what I've noticed from my client is that she has been writing every day, you know, where she just had this, well, she was very busy in her life, but she really wanted to write. And since I've given her the prompts and she's been getting up this 15 minutes earlier, she's been writing every day because she's been sending me the writing. So, it's,
yeah.
You know, and I think very much of what you said is that it's simmering, the writing is now simmering.
Yeah.
It's there. And so she's sort of writing this one piece in the morning and then she's going off and doing her day. And then it's simmering where she's waking up in the morning, and it's the next piece is already there. It's really flowing out of her. And for me, as a writing coach, it's so exciting, you know, when your students are writing, and it's such an honor to get to read their work, but also to be in the process, in the creative process with them.
I think that daily writing practice can be transformative for writers, especially if they're people like me with maybe a sort of shy, reticent muse who's like, doesn't want to, you know, pitch up. But if you just keep showing up every day, consistently saying, I'm going to write on this thing today, you know, then you learn to trust that and to trust yourself, and the ideas start coming, and it's a really exciting, wonderful thing, you know, when you stick to it.
Yes, I agree. It's exciting. I was reading recently where, you know, someone was writing about the pain, you know, there's like a pain, there can be a pain in writing.
Yeah.
Sort of I think that's the general process of writing. I also think, depending on what kind of writing that you're doing, specifically if you were doing memoir writing and a lot is coming up, you know, if you're revisiting some difficult times or traumatic times in your life, that it can be painful. You know, the emotional pain. And I think that it's so important to also remember that writing can be fun.
Yes, yes.
And it can be really fun. And how to, you know, acknowledge that, yes, it can be painful sometimes. Yes, it can be a struggle. It can be a struggle when you just don't want to write today, you know, and you're feeling that you don't, you know, you don't have anything to write about. And one thing I say to my students is, when you're writing and you come across that mental block, then keep writing, even if it's if you're writing, I don't know what to write.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to write. And something will come.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just keep the pen moving, or keep the keys moving on the computer. Just keep it moving. Which I was going to ask you about, you mentioned that you're always doing a free write. When you're doing a free write, do you work on the computer, or do you work in a notebook?
I work on the computer, because after so many years of working in technology, I can type almost as fast as I can think, and my handwriting is just terrible, and I can't even read it when I'm done. So really, it's the only option for me. And I also I'm using a little, right now, for a lot of this, I'm using an online app called The Write Margin, which is a writing application.
Okay.
Because I like being able to access it from the laptop if I'm traveling, or my desktop, or anywhere, knowing it's just there in the cloud. And, you know, after I've done something with it, I delete it. I keep files open. I have a file with ideas for writing blogs, because I'll post a blog related to writing once a week. So I like to have lots of things queued up for that. And I just have a big file with big mess of ideas and thoughts and free writing. I think that the important thing is to give yourself permission to have a place where what you write is only for you, and it's not necessarily a first draft, or just take any of that pressure off it that is something you're going to show to anyone else. David Foster Wallace did what he called zero drafts. They're not first drafts. They are zero drafts of things, which I think is, you know, really cool. Just give yourself permission to have zero drafts, or free, you know, I label these things, and if I save them in a file, I label it, you know, thoughts or junk or research or something, but it's really clear that this is not a product. And that's for myself, not for anyone looking at the files. That's to remind myself, I can just write whatever the heck I want here, and I can ask myself questions or whatever. Like you were talking, just, you know, keep going, just power through, just spit out stupid ideas and see what happens, you know.
It's interesting that you mentioned David Foster Wallace, who I still haven't read, but my best friend. It just, you know, adores his writing. And I almost feel that I've read his books because she'll fill me in. I have to read his books. And she's like, they're a commitment, you know?
Yes, I think that's true. Yeah.
But one series that I love is the Paris Review of Books. And some of these interviews go back to the 1920s and the 1930s. And they're interviewing Dorothy Parker, William Faulkner, you know, just really all the greats and writers that I had never heard of. You know, it's such a long time ago. You know, there's some writers who were, you know, born in the 1800s, you know, and so, but it's amazing. And, you know, the questions that they're being asked in the interviews is, you know, when do you write and what's your writing process? And one of the writers, I don't think it was Faulkner, it was someone who was also very famous. Again, I'm blanking on the name, it's one of those days. But I just heard the other day that each day we get 50,000, around 50,000 marketing ads, you know, that we see every day on every website. We have so much information coming at us, so I'll have to be kind to myself that I can't remember. But this author said, you know, he was working as a postman at the time and he had two small children. And he would go and write in his car.
Yeah, I think I've read about that and I can't think of who that is either. Yeah, I mean, Kafka wrote, you know, at night after his family went to bed, you know, there's a wonderful book called Process. Just Process by Sarah Stadola, where she looks at the writing processes of all these famous authors. And then there's this book. Working Days. So Steinbeck kept writing journals. So he would begin his writing day. He would do 2,000 words a day. He would begin his day in his journal talking about what he was going to do, and then he'd finish it out what he did. So you get not just, you know, what the author says in their interview about what their process is, but you get the unvarnished, you know, hangovers and, you know, self-despair and I am not a writer. You know, you get all of that stuff in here. It's fascinating. It's actually sort of, you know, I read it like a suspense novel. It's like, oh, I wonder if he's going to get the book published. And, you know, of course he is. It's The Grapes of Wrath he was writing, you know, but it's so interesting because I think that we all have our different processes, and I think that it is one of the best things you can do for yourself as a writer is to look at your own process with curiosity and experiment with it as you have, and figure out what works for you because we're all really different. Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like when it comes to the problems we're trying to address, they're all really pretty much the same. We share a similar set of problems, all of us, and so we can learn a lot by, you know, examining what we do, looking at what others do, experimenting, and also forgiving ourselves for the things, the problems we suffer, because probably everybody has some degree of those things.
Yes, and actually Steinbeck is in those interviews.
Yeah.
And I can't remember now specifically what he said. I just remember that it was a really interesting interview.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Interesting character. And I think you're right that just that, you know, if we're having some blocks or having some problems, that the likelihood is that another writer, another person is having the same. And again, where I feel that writing can be so isolating. And I think that's one reason why it's so important to connect with other writers, whether you're in a writer's group or, you know, you find a writing community online, or even for me, you know, I feel that I'm pretty good at being disciplined and writing, but I also have a coach, writing coach. And I have a writing coach because I want to have accountability. I want, and I also want feedback. So that helps me. And it also, you know, if there's been a few days that I haven't written for whatever reason, okay, I actually found it very hard to write when I was sick recently, that I'd be like, oh no, well, I have a coaching call on Monday. I better at least write 2,000 words so that I can, you know, say, oh, I did write. And it's not that I'm going to get in trouble, but it's more about me feeling, you know, like giving myself a hard time.
Yes. Yes. Right. Exactly. I think for a lot of people that accountability is, really important. I'm one of those people who I actually stress myself out. So I need, accountability is not a problem. Sometimes I need to tell myself, it's okay. And you can be like, chill out for a little bit. So I need like the chill coach. I need that. I don't know if there's a job description. Let's, but yeah.
I think that's a great idea. A chill coach. I like that.
I think the other interesting thing is that, you know, if you are looking to write a book, say, whether that's fiction, nonfiction, memoir, whatever, if you want it out in the world, then you're going to enter the world of marketing your book. And that is like the most social thing in the world. So, you know, start making author friends now, join communities, meet people, because it's going to make the whole marketing thing way more fun. And it can be fun if you approach it with the right mindset. It can be a lot of fun. So
that's great. You know, that's a great piece of advice for people who are looking at publishing, you know, getting their work published, whether it's with, you know, a publisher, a big publisher, a small publisher, or being self-published, that there is, you know, once you have your work out there. Even a couple of days ago, I was in the bookstore and I just spent 2 hours. I was literally, and I looked through the latest memoirs and also went to the psychology and the self-help section, because I'm also still researching, you know, for this series of who else could be included, also for future, you know, the future series. So I was, you know, there's one thing looking on Amazon for books, and there's another thing going to the actual local bookstore, because I like to support my local bookstore. And, you know, holding that book in your hand, you know, I have a library of about 2,000 books, and my kids are like, stop. Yes, mom, stop. You don't need to buy all these books, or you can go to the library or something. But I need to have that book, you know, on my shelf.
Yeah.
And, but I thought it was interesting that, you know, there's all these books, and it, first of all, it made me feel very, positive and hopeful when people say, oh, it's really hard to get published, that it's sort of like winning the lottery ticket, you know. Well, if the person who had the winning ticket didn't think they'd have a chance of winning, they wouldn't have bought a lottery ticket.
That's true. And
if they hadn't bought it, they wouldn't have won. So it's like, no, you can be published, and you can self-publish. You know, self-publishing is so much easier now.
Yes. There's so many tools and things, that are available to people now that weren't before. You know, so this, in a sense, is my third book, the second edition. And I think I've learned something new about the process and done something differently each time. And it's been a lot of fun, you know. But there's so many ways to approach it. Yeah.
So with your book on marketing, is that, for our viewers, is that specifically a book on marketing your own work, you know, your own books for writers?
No, so the marketing book is really more about, it's for businesses. That's kind of from my past life, if you will, right? I'm a recovering marketer, except I'm still marketing because now I'm marketing my books. So then the second book was this one about writing. And I think the next thing I'm going to work on is going to be about writing as well. It's called The Writer's Process.
Right.
This is what I'm really excited about working on and writing about and thinking about now. This is also independently published. So I hire a professional cover designer, I hire a professional editor, I hire a professional copy editor. I mean, I tried to make sure it's, I actually filled the functions of a small press when I did this. And that was my choice for how I chose to approach the book. And I had my reasons in each case for publishing independently. But now that I've kind of really figured it out, I'm not sure I would change those reasons. I'm a control freak. I didn't know that. You know, the things you learn about yourself. I really like having control over the cover design and the publication date and all of those things.
When I got a copy of your book, that book, I very much thought that it was it is professionally published, but I thought that it was from a major publishing house because it's so well done. The cover is beautiful and just so well put together. I mean, it really is like, this could have come from like Simon Schuster or someone, you know?
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. And I think that's, that's definitely a note for viewers who have got their finished manuscript and they're thinking of self-publishing and, for people to see with your book that it can be done on this level, that it's extremely professional. I mean, I've seen some self-published books that you kind of look at them and it doesn't, not meaning that the content isn't good, but just looking at the cover going, oh, it looks self-published. And it's not that the cover's not, I think, because I'm such a visual learner, that the cover has to be really appealing to me. I have to just go, and I think most people are like that we are given so many images every day, so it's the ones that stand out. Yeah. And so I love the, can you hold your book up one more time? Because I just love the cover and I'm such a tea person. I mean, I love tea, but it was just like, when I wake up in the morning, I make my big cup of tea, my big cup and then put it beside me and I start typing. But it's just a beautiful book.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I have if you're going to invest your effort in it, invest in a professional cover design from someone who understands book covers, not just any graphic person, but someone who says, it's not just what does this look like? What's the look and feel when you pick it up in a store? But it's what does this look like on the Amazon page? Right. I mean, in the little tiny, this is not a bad way to look at it. So if you have a fussy design with lots of graphic, it disappears into nothing if you're selling online, which, most of us are.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting set of things to think about. And also make sure the interior layout is pleasing and easy to read. I mean, I've seen so many books you open up, it's like, this is going to hurt to read, right? It's just like my eyes are tired thinking about it, and that's just not good. You know, anything that gets between your reader and you is not good. So.
And on that note, I'd like you to share that you're going to offer a free gift to our viewers. And can you share what that is?
Yes. So I thought appropriate to this series, I would share some chapters that from this book that I think maybe might be the most useful and accessible to people who are in the writing phase. And they have to do with the things that can trip us up. So finding time to write, dealing with the imposter syndrome, and what was the other chapter? I should know this book, right? I mean, working through writer's block, right? So what I do in the book and what I'll do in these chapters is give you some ideas of things to try, to just test out. Because my philosophy is, get some understanding of how your inner processes work and then test things out and see what works best for you. So I'll have a PDF with those three chapters. They're pretty short, pretty actionable, things that you can just try. So there you go. So I'll have that available for your
people
watching.
So definitely, I'll say to the viewers, definitely go and check out Anne's website. And there'll be a link so that they can come over to you. And especially people who are coming, they know about other authors or they've heard about this interview through another author.
Mm-hmm.
another artist, another coach that I've interviewed in the series. And if they're not familiar with their work, with your work, then they can pop over and see. And so on that note, can you share some of the things that you share in the chapter on writer's block?
On writer's block, okay. So writer's block, it kind of depends on what strain of writer's block you've caught, right? I mean, the term can be used to refer to lots of different things. One of it might be fear of the blank page. I sit down and I got nothing, right? So that's one kind of writer's block. I've got nothing. And I think that often one of the causes of that is that you're trying to start in the middle. You're trying to start with the drafting phase. And that's not, you know, the drafting phase, if writing is, you know, an iceberg, there you go. The drafting is the tip. And, you know, before it, you have research and incubation and feeding the muse ideas to look around and outlining, and then you draft. Yeah. And then afterwards, you revise and you revise and you revise and you make it better. So you give yourself permission to let the draft be imperfect. So one of the things I think that can stop people is that. Another is that if you're trying to write something that's, again, if you're trying to cram the whole writing process into the draft, right, into that phase, then you want everything you write to be perfect, beautiful, brilliant. And so you're going to shoot down all of these ideas that are coming to you because they're not quite good enough. The words aren't good. You're going to just get stuck. Right. So again, giving yourself permission to write something bad, to just let it go, to come back and fix it later, is another way to get past writer's block. And sometimes you're just stuck on a problem. You're stuck on it. You've written into a corner. You just don't, you've got that kind of block. It's like, I've got to this point. I have no idea where this story is going, right? And so I offer in the book some strategies on inviting your muse to work on that while you're doing other things. You can be very intentional about triggering those subconscious processes to work when you're doing other things. So I'll share some strategies on that.
That's so great. That will be so helpful for our viewers. Most of our viewers are writers, you know, at different stages in their writing. You know, some people may feel that, you know, they're a complete amateur. Some people, you know, will have books published. But it's, you know, it's like for me, that saying you learn something every day. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we do learn something every day. I think definitely with social media, we could learn a lot, but it's definitely been proved that, you know, if you read something, don't particularly believe it, you know, do some research, you know, we could be believing that, you know, pigs are actually flying or up or somewhere in Iceland or something, but maybe we mentioned icebergs made me think of, I was actually in Iceland 2 summers ago.
Yeah.
And, it's beautiful, such a beautiful place. They actually have, a writer's retreat, artist in residence in Iceland. I didn't go on that. I actually just took myself on a little vacation and on my way to London. But I was thinking that would be a really interesting writer's retreat to apply to.
Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Just a sort of, in the summer. I don't know if I...
You might get more writing done in the winter. I don't know.
That's a good point. That's sometimes why I don't mind the rain, because it keeps me in.
Yeah.
But so all, you know, most of the people in this interview series are offering tips on writer's block. And everyone has, you know, their own, you know, like ideas and beliefs on it. So it'd be great for our viewers when they come over to your website and be able to download the PDFs and read, you know, like you said, you have a whole chapter on writer's block.
Yes. It's not a long chapter, but it's filled with ideas and things to try. So.
So great. There's many ideas in there.
Yeah.
And it'll just be very, very helpful because I think just like anything, it's, you know, like you know, if we, I have a couple of, I have a very good friend who's a doctor, and he's an MD, but he does integrative medicine. Mm-hmm. And then I've become friends with his friend. She's also a doctor and does integrative medicine. And really, I feel that writers, he also writes quite a lot. But that, you know, if you're in certain professions, like in the medical field, you really have to keep up with the latest of what's going on, you know, sort of reading articles, you know, there's breakthroughs in medicine, et cetera, et cetera. But the same with writing. It's like any art form, but any profession, is that there's information out there. And you were talking about sort of the science around the cognitive thinking. And, you know, for some reason it just made me think of Charles Dickens, but, you know, how he was such a prolific writer. And I have a little magnet on my fridge from the Charles Dickens Museum in London. And it has a picture of him, and it says, accidents occur in the most like stable and organized of families. You know, where did that come from? But, you know, wondering sort of, you know, when Charles Dickens was writing, you know, there probably wasn't that many resources for writers in terms of, you know, what do I do if I have writer's block? You know, who do I go and talk to? You know, you know, we can't ask Charles Dickens. We can't ask, you know, Emily Bronte or Charlotte Bronte, you know, Jameson. They're just not here anymore. I think probably Virginia Woolf did write about that, you know, and talked about sort of, well, as we know, sort of having a room of your own.
Right.
To write. So this is what the video series really is about, is how we can individually and collectively be a resource, and a resource for writers and artists and people who, you know, may just feel, I'm a writer, but I haven't written anything yet, but I have all these great ideas.
Right.
And that's a great place to start. It's a great jumping off place, and that all of us, with anything that we've done, you know, we had to start somewhere.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us are taking ourselves on that next step. We're all just trying to get from, you know, this step onto the next step. And that's our obligation to ourselves. I mean, I think that writing is a journey of discovery in yourself as much as anything else. And so if we can encourage anybody to set out on that journey, give them some moral support. Every one of us has the ability to make our process a little bit better, to make our craft a little bit better. And I feel, personally, I feel like working on the process and understanding that about yourself makes your writing better, and also makes the process itself more joyful and more fulfilling. And so it is its own reward in a way.
I love what you just said. You know, that it can be joyful and rewarding. And I, on that note, I think that that's just such a warmth of a place to close the interview. We've talked about so much, and yes, learn more about you, the way, I loved what I learned about the way that you think, and your thought processes, and that, you know, that the books that you've written, it does take so much dedication to write a book. So I really congratulate you on just doing one book. Is
thanks.
You know, as a writer, I know, I really do know that, what that's like.
It gets easier.
Oh, that's what I'm hoping, that
yes,
it gets easier. And so that's great for our viewers to know. It gets easier.
I think so. Yeah.
It's like what they say about having babies. Like, it's easier, you know. You know, when people are like, my youngest sister has, she had a fifth child a couple of years ago, and wow. I'm wondering, I just wonder if that just gets easier.
I guess.
Yeah, I meet people with, you know, they come from like a family of 7 or 10 children. But on that note, I have a friend, and there was at least 10 of them, and somehow the mom managed to find the time to write a book.
Hmm. Wow.
And it was a memoir, and the book is The High Price of Paradise.
Ah.
Writing about having this big family.
Wow.
So I'd like to think about our books as families, you know, that, and that us as writers, that even if we don't know each other, we're a big family. And that, sure. And that we have probably more than one commonality, but we know that it's one that the big one for all of us, I'm sure, is like a love of words and ultimately the love of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate you talking with me today and being part of this series. And thank you so much for offering your free gift. And I really would like to say to our viewers, please take advantage. It's absolutely free. Just hop over to Anne's website and find out, look at her books and download the free PDF. And then you'll be able to read Anne's work and hopefully actually buy the book and go from there. But it's all for free, so you don't have to buy anything, but there's always an option.
You know, my red letter day for me as an author is when somebody sends me an email or calls me up and said, you know, that thing that you wrote really helped me. You know, I'm now started writing a book, or you just solved this problem for me and I'm going off and working on it. I mean, that to me, yeah, a book sale is nice, but a comment like that is gold. That's why you do it. You know, that's golden.
Exactly. That's golden.
Yeah.
They say that's golden. Well, I really appreciate your time. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks for having me. It's great. Yeah. It's fun.
Thank you so much. It has been really